Thank you all for attending. It's my great pleasure to share these glorious teachings of Srila Prabhupada with everyone here. And I pray for all of your prayers and blessings that I may say something useful and beneficial for all of us so that everyone may come out instead of unscathed, blessed by Guru, Gauranga, and the Supreme Lord. Thank you. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam today, we are in the ninth canto, 13th chapter, and I'll start reading the English of verse number 4, and together we will do number 5. Okay? So let me just do that. We can move on. Text number 4. After completing the sacrificial performance for King Indra, the spiritual master Vasishtha returned and found that his disciple Maharaj Nimi had disobeyed his instructions. Thus Vasishtha cursed him, saying, "May the material body of Nimi, who considers himself learned, immediately fall." So now we'll do today's verse. Nimi prati dadau shapam shapam guruve adharma vartane tava api deha. Did I miss something? Patatat. Deha. Lobhat. Dharmam. Ajanataha. Nimi nimi prati dadau shapam guruve dharma vartane tvapi patata deho loba dharma majanataha. Nimi prati dadau shapam guruve dharma vartane tavapi patata deho loba dharma majanataha. Nimi prati dadau shapam guruve dharma vartane tavapi patata deho lobhadharma majanataha. Please chant. Mm-hmm.
sarve dharma vartine tavapi tamata deho loba dharma majanataha japam.
Ladies, please.
Nimi patita dana. Patita dana.
No one else? Any more of the men would like to chant? No? Okay. Nimi, Maharaj Nimi, Prati Dadao, no, it's two words together. Prati Dadao Shapam, counter cursed, Guruve, unto his spiritual master, Vasishta, Adharma, Vartine, who was induced to irreligious principles because he cursed his offenseless disciple. Tava, of you. Api, also. Patatat, let it fall. Deha, the body. Lobhat, because of greed. Dharmam, religious principles. Ajanataha, not knowing. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation. For unnecessarily cursing him when he had committed no offense, Maharaj Nimi counter-cursed his spiritual master. Quote, for the sake of getting contributions from the King of Heaven, he said, you have lost your religious intelligence. Therefore, I pronounce this curse upon your body. It will also fall. Purport. The religious principle for a Brahmin is that he should not be greedy at all. In this case, however, for the sake of more lucrative remunerations, does everybody know what the word remunerations means? If you don't, raise your hand. Okay, we have quite a few. Good. Okay, remunerations means, for example, when you do a job and you get paid, that's a remuneration. Okay? We got it all now? So everybody learned, not everybody, but some of us learned a new word today. Okay? And lucrative means profitable. Okay? So profitable, payback. However, for the sake of more lucrative remunerations from the King of Heaven, Vasishta neglected Maharaj Nimi's request on this planet. And when Nimi performed the sacrifices with other priests, Vasishta unnecessarily cursed him. When one is infected by contaminated activities, his power, material or spiritual, reduces. Although Vasishta was the spiritual master of Maharaj Nimi, because of his greed, he became fallen. Omagyanati mirandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet. Again, the idea was that King Nimi wanted the priest and also spiritual master Vasishta to perform a sacrifice for him But at that time that he asked him, he was too busy about to perform a sacrifice for King Indra, in which he obviously would be handsomely rewarded. And he said, you wait for some time, and as soon as I'm finished, I will then perform your sacrifice. Now, there was no agreement there on the part of Nimi. Excuse me. A little crick in the neck. There was no agreement between them. It wasn't like Nimi said, okay, I'll wait. That's an agreement. He just was silent. He didn't say anything. In other words, he left the door open for himself. Look, if you're too busy, then I'll get somebody else. I mean, what's the big deal? So that's exactly what he did. He went and he got some other priests to perform the ceremony. Remember, Nimi is a king. He's a Maharaj. And he wanted the ceremony done for whatever reason. That reason is not given here. But he obviously wanted it done for some beneficial purpose, because generally kings perform ceremonies, good kings, and Nimi was a self-realized king. So he obviously would perform a ceremony for something good, something beneficial, something helpful. And he didn't want to postpone it, didn't want to wait, didn't want to delay. Time is very, very short. We never know when we're going to leave. So, as we will see in other purports, Prabhupada says, why waste even a moment when you can do something useful now? And that was the basic idea there. So, Vasishta Muni, he became insulted when he finally finished the sacrifice. He approached his disciple, King Nimi. I said, why did you have somebody else do this? I told you I would do it when I was finished. He was upset. He was angry. And it shows you, when a person is angry for materialistic purposes, usually there is pride there, false pride. The kind of pride that none of us want to cultivate, or if we have it, we all want to get rid of it. This is the kind of pride that eats us up as devotees. I'm so important. I'm so great. I'm so wonderful. I'm so glorious. And Vasishtha was a very well-known priest. He was the priest of Lord Ramchandra and King Dasharath. But what it shows here is that in the course of being a top-notch priest, you can let it go to your head. You begin to think, yes, I am the best, I am the greatest, I am the highest, I am the biggest. How can anyone dare go to someone else when I've already promised to do his sacrifice? This is his mentality. So out of anger, he cursed him to die. An innocent disciple, you curse him to die. The disciple couldn't care less, because he was a God-realized disciple, and the faster he could get back home, back to Godhead, the better it was for him. So he didn't really care. And as we will see in the Torah, as the story goes on, here, just as the disciple is cursed, the disciple counter-curses the guru. He says, you die also. So they're both lying out on the ground, dead. And so what to do with Vasishtha? Well, it just happened to be that male and a female happened to be walking along the road, as we will see, and they passed Urvashi, who happens to be one of the, they call them society women, but actually they are prostitutes, and they fulfill the sexual desires of many warriors who have gone to Indraloka. And that's their business. And they are dancers, too. They're very good dancers, and they can allure and arouse all the men who want to be aroused. And they walk a certain way. They speak a certain way. They're very charming, very alluring, and they create desire in men. And there are quite a number of incidents in our scriptures in which Urvashi, she appears and creates these types of feelings, which I won't go into because it's not germane to today's talk. Anyway, so Vasishtha Muni took birth again from the conjunction of this male and female, whose name escapes me at the moment, And though he would be born again in a material body. The body of Nimi was preserved in oils, and they wanted to bring him back to life. However, Nimi conveyed this, obviously, from his subtle body or spiritual body, that he did not want to come back in a material body. He was in a spiritual body already, ready to go back home. And he said he didn't want to have to ever enter into a material body again. There was no reason for him. He was in a spiritual body. What is a spiritual body? It's a body which is flooded, filled, saturated with Satchidananda. Eternality, knowledge, bliss, absolute. He's always blissful. He's always peaceful. He's always happy. He always has the knowledge. He's always thinking of God. You can't do better than that. So he was quite happy where he was. But some of the persons who knew him, they still wanted his counsel and guidance. And he said, well, what I'll do is I'll come back, but only in my spiritual body. And I will show it only to those persons whom I want to show it to. And this is how Krishna acted. Many people saw Krishna and they just saw him as an ordinary person. And others saw whom he really was, the five Pandavas in particular. So, therefore, he wanted to have that right to remain in his spiritual body. Because he was always blissful, always peaceful, and he wanted to deal with persons on a spiritual level. So coming back to Vasishtha, which is really important for us, because it could happen to any of us. Some of us become very competent, very capable, very astute, very adept at different skills, at different abilities, different problems. And we begin to become proud. We might become a great pujari. We might become a great cook. You might become a great book distributor. You might become any of these. And you start to get proud. Well, yesterday I did 20 books and I did so many dollars. Today I did 40 books and I have twice the amount of money. Now I'm doing hundreds of books and I'm getting thousands of dollars. And hardly anybody is even coming near me. So there is a great temptation there for pride. Even though we may try to be humble and say, no, but it's all being done by Krishna. That's from one side of the mouth. From the other side of the mouth, it's, well, maybe I'm doing a little bit. Maybe I'm helping out. He's helping Krishna. You know, Krishna really needs the help. So he wants to take a little credit. And it's hard not to take it, even when you say, no, I didn't do anything. It was all being done by the sweetness of the Supreme Lord. But down deep, we all have this motivation to want to be lords of this material world. To be a lord of the material world means to be an enjoyer. It means to be a controller. It means to be an owner, a proprietor. It means to be the friend of all. So that desire exists in every one of us. But it did not exist anymore in King Nimi. But it did exist in Vasishtha. And because it existed in Vasishtha, he wanted more wealth, which he didn't even need. As Srila Prabhupada says, the business of a Brahmin is not to get wealthy. And when you get wealthy, give it out to other Brahmins who need it. Otherwise, you become greedy and you become proud. I have so much, I'll make a nicer house, I'll get more jewels for sacrifice. I mean, it becomes very materialistic when it really shouldn't be. The chief Brahmin of a chief Brahmin of a community should set the example. And the example here should be that, well, fine, you got the ceremony done by somebody else, good. There should have been no objection. No disturbance, no upset, gladness. The disciple has improved his situation faster than he otherwise would have. But that was not the response. That's not the way he reacted. He cursed them to die. So, sometimes the question comes up, how do I know if I'm fully Krishna conscious? And in fact, Arjuna asks that very question in the Bhagavad Gita. What are the symptoms of a person who is fully steeped in transcendence? How does he speak? What is his language? How does he walk and how does he sit? How do you know? And Krishna says, when a man gives up all varieties of sense gratification, and when his mind thus purified, when a man gives up all varieties of sense gratification, which arises from mental concoction, and when his mind thus purified, finds complete satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. So that's the key. A person is tasting, he's experiencing, he's relishing, he's delighting the presence of God. It says when he feels the pleasure of the self. So there's the little self, which is the soul, and there's the big self, or the super self, or the super soul, that floods the little self, the soul, with transcendental bliss. And when the soul is filled with transcendental bliss and transcendental peace and transcendental happiness, and he responds in a proper way, not in a way which is foolhardy, as Vasishtha did, in a very greedy fashion, in a materialistic fashion, when he responds in a transcendental way, and I've already given the way which Vasishtha should have responded, but he didn't, because he, as I said, he got proud, and therefore he lost his life. So false pride always leads to something disastrous if we don't overcome it. We should all assume, including myself, that we all have it. We should never come to the idea, even if we don't have it, that we don't have it. The safe way to go is, yes, I'm full of pride, I'm full of arrogance, any moment I can be condescending and patronizing. All these I have manifested in the past, and who can say when they'll manifest in the present? Anything is possible. So, yes, I'm proud. So, therefore, my dear Lord, because I am proud, I am begging for your mercy to help me to become modest, unassuming, and humble. Humble is not merely something physical or something showy. It's an inner condition of the heart. It's the feeling that I am insignificant next to Krishna. I'm inconsiderable. I am small, unimportant, unvaluable, and anything that I have, which is good, which is great, which is wonderful, which is glorious, it did not come from my effort. It came from the grace of God, which crowned my effort. If we can remember this in all our dealings, we'll be saved from this pride. I think in one of my other talks, I mentioned that it's my own personal motto is that I am nothing except what Krishna makes me. I have nothing except what he gives me. I know nothing except what he teaches me. I do nothing except what he enables me to do. And I want nothing except pure love of his lotus feet. For in that way, I will have everything and even more. Now, what does that mean, and even more? It means if I have everything in this world, that's nothing compared to what I will get from Krishna, because I will get all those things which are transcendental, which are above and beyond anything and everything we could ever get, and which would give us any happiness in this world. Krishna gives us his personal self. What could be better than that? Krishna gives us devotional service. What could be better than that? Krishna gives us his grace, his kindness, his sweetness, his affection, his warmth. He's looking out for us. Feeds us, clothes us, shelters us, educates us, medicates us, gives us everything that we need to go on with our life. We're all sitting here very peacefully. You know, the ceiling isn't coming down. The light is shining out there. Everything looks peaceful. In some places, yeah, the ceilings are coming down. There's a bomb that just went off someplace. The terrorists are all over them. Or poison gas is getting released. Or somebody walks out and he gets shot. Or he goes to school thinking he's going to learn his algebra and geometry, and a guy comes into the room, and he just, with his Tommy gun or machine gun, and he shoots nine students. I think it was nine in the last one. Every few weeks, somebody's going to school and getting shot. When I went to school, there was no such thing. No youngster, no teenager carried guns. It was unheard of. We had slingshots, you know, like we had BB guns, but we didn't have real, you know, Magnum 55s or whatever they call them. No such thing. No one would even dare to think of such a thing. But Kali Yuga has progressed or deteriorated to such an amazing degree that students don't even have any compunction or any fear. As long as we're on this subject, let me get into that, because I had mentioned that it is because of this feeling of wanting to lord it over this material world, which we all have. Lord it over means, as I already said, to enjoy as much as we can, to own as much as we can, to control as much as we can, and have everyone become our friends, and we can think, yes, everybody loves me. This is being a lord. And the temptation is always there. In that very nice prayer of Jesus Christ, he says, you know, help me to resist temptations. Let me not be subject to temptation. That's a good thing to say every morning. No one should think he's not subject to temptation, because we've come here to enjoy. We've come to own. And we may do these things in an unscrupulous, malicious, or wrong way. And if we do that, then the reaction will be ours, as it has been here for Vasishtha Muni. Sometimes people wonder, why does a young man come into school and just start shooting? It's very interesting. And when you examine his past, you find out that he didn't have any girlfriend, wanted a girlfriend. Nobody really cared for him. Nobody looked up to him. Nobody thought very highly of him. You know, he didn't have a letter from the team. You know, we all wore those letters. I had my letter. I was on the swimming team and walked around proudly with a big M, James Monroe High School. So, yeah, you feel big, you feel great. And you make sure that you pass all the young girls to make sure that they know you've got a letter. So he had none of this, yet nothing. Small time, good for nothing. We learn as we grow up in the material world, especially in a society which places an emphasis on conspicuous consumption and also on worldly glorification, that if you don't have nothing, you don't have anything, you might as well drop dead. You're not worth anything. You don't deserve to live. That's the mentality. You don't deserve to live unless you're a somebody. And actually, nobody is an anybody. The only one who really is an anybody is Krishna and his great devotees. They mean, they count. When they leave this world, they go into the eternal world. They continue. But everybody else just comes back into another material body and does the same old disgusting, stupid things. So what happens is that the man feels small, he feels tiny, he feels insignificant. How can I make myself significant? How can I show this world that their good fortune is depending upon my mercy? Watch how I show them. This kid had about 13 or 14 guns when they examined his home. So he goes into the school, he says, what, you think your life, you think you have control over your life? You think you own your life? Just see my opulence. Just see my power. He's no longer a small timer. He thinks he's a big timer now. And in a sense, from the material point of view, he will be, because it'll be on every TV station. It'll be all over the computers. It will be all over the newspapers, in every magazine, every psychiatrist will be venturing to think, you know, why does such a person do such a thing? He comes from a good home. He has good clothes. They feed him regularly. He got even fairly good grades. Why does such a person do that? Because we put a premium on material success, and this person couldn't bear it. He couldn't deal with it. He couldn't face it. And so he collapsed under it, snapped. And as a result of the snapping, he felt all-powerful. And to make things even better in his mind, I'm not even going to let them catch me. I'm not going to let them trial me, put me through a trial, which would give them the satisfaction of, you know, putting me in prison or giving me the execution sentence. I'm not even going to give them that pleasure. I'm in charge of the pleasure. Now try and get me. This is the mentality. This is the mentality. I'm in charge. I'm the controller. Just see my opulence. Madness. Insanity. Complete. I can't even find any more words for it. But that's what's going on. And that's why it's so important for mothers and fathers to love their children. Whether they're top in the little league or not, whether they even get into it. Even if they're the worst player, they're lovable, huggable. Please, they should be pleased. And when their friends are getting ice cream because they won the game, your kid should get ice cream also, even though he didn't win, even though he didn't show himself to be, you know, he was a pitcher, no hitter, even though he didn't hit a home run. Doesn't matter. Everybody is lovable because everyone belongs to Krishna. And if we belong to Krishna, then we're all brothers and sisters. And being brothers and sisters, then how could we not like each other? Why should we not encourage each other? Why should we not enthuse one another? Why should we not give each other a boost, a push, so that everyone does well? And if we don't do well, you're acceptable. Some of us don't have the skill. Some of us are good mathematicians. Some of us good artists. Some of us good speakers. Some of us are good writers. Doesn't mean that because I'm good this, good that, I'm better, I'm higher, I'm superior. Those things are meaningless in Krishna's eyes. In Krishna's eyes, he sees us as all equal, and the only ones he sees superior to are his devotees who are ready to sacrifice not one life, not 10 lives, not 100 lives, but millions and millions of lives, because they know that Krishna is worthy of such sacrifice. So when those are the persons who really mean to Krishna, and that's mentioned. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone, I'm equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am a friend to him. What does that mean, I'm a friend to him? It means I appreciate what he's doing. He takes one step to me, I take 10 to him. He glorifies me, I'll make sure somebody glorifies or many people glorify him. Like Arjuna was glorified all the time. Krishna loved him. So, now getting back to another point that I really wanted to talk about, and we're getting late, but it's really important. What is the obverse side of all this? There is the, for example, lust, anger, and greed. These lead to the degradation of the soul. But they don't have to for devotees. So it says every sane man or every sound man should give these up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. But lust, anger, and greed for a devotee can mean something far, far better and superior. When Lord Chaitanya was having that meaningful, wonderful conversation with Ramananda Roy, and Lord asked him, what's the most important thing to desire? And Ramananda Roy said, the most important thing to desire is to desire devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Be greedy for it. Want it. Desire it. Be eager for it. Don't stop for a moment until you have it. And when you have it, try to have more and more and more. And then share it with others. Engage others in devotional service. And this is what Ramananda Roy says. So greed is good if it's greed for the right thing. Greed for devotional service. Greed to please Krishna. Greed to glorify Krishna. Greed to worship Krishna. Greed to honor Krishna. Greed to bow down to Krishna. Greed to throw ourselves at the feet of the great devotees, Srila Prabhupada and some of his disciples. Have that kind of greed. And lust. Well, the gopis of Vrindavan, they had lust. Lust for whom? Lust for Krishna. They were always thinking of him. So lust in the material world is like iron. And what does it lead to? Misery, misery, misery. When we lust, we want to own the person. Because in the act of lust, in the activity of lust, the person feels, I own you. I'm gaining pleasure from you. I'm giving you pleasure. And I'm your best friend. This is madness. This is material madness. But real lust, pure lust, is not like iron, it's like gold. And iron, as we know, is corrosive. It's rusty. But gold doesn't get rusty. It stays pure. And so we need to always be thinking of, you know, our real desire is to love Krishna, serve Krishna, honor Krishna, glorify Krishna. And when we see a devotee try to do something nice, well, irrespective of whether he has done something nice for us, or whether he will do something nice, unconditional, that's what's desirable. Because every time we do something unconditionally for a devotee and offer to Krishna, as Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, do it for me. And if you do it for me, you will be freed from the bondage to work and its auspicious and inauspicious results. With your mind fixed on me and this principle of renunciation, you will be liberated and you will come to me. Renunciation? Give. Give. That's what renunciation is. You give up this. Give up the things you like for Krishna's pleasure. When you do that, he's pleased. And if you can't do it honestly, okay, hold it back for another day. But give it. Have the desire. Everything I have should ultimately be given to Krishna, because he owns it, he deserves it, and he should have it. And if I give it to him and he's pleased, then it will enable me to grow closer and closer in love to Krishna. So, therefore, greed can be good when we are greedy for Krishna. Lust can be good. Look at the gopis of Vrindavan when Krishna would go out to the pasturing ground with his boyfriends. They would be standing on the balcony, staring, stunned. They couldn't take their eyes off Krishna. Like this. And then as they receded, as they went, and the dust from the cows was coming up, and tears were flowing down their eyes, and they were thinking, how many hours must we wait for his return? Oh, it will be like millions of years. And finally, no Krishna to see. And all they could see is the dust settling down on the ground. And then they would go to their respective duties and start churning the butter and the milk. And they were like almost puppets. They were hardly even thinking of what they were doing. They were thinking of Krishna. Okay, 1 hour has gone by. He's out at the pasturing ground for 5 more hours to wait. Will I live? It felt like they were dying. And finally Krishna would come and they would all crowd around on the balcony. There he is! There he is! And they would see him like a half a mile away. And the dust from the cows was coming up. And they said, there's Krishna. And they would start singing his glories. This is the lust we want. To lust after Krishna. To desire to please him. To serve him. To honor him. To share him. And that's so important. Sharing him. We have our books to share him with. We have our prasadam to share him. Rabindranath will be out there. Unless something has happened to him. But he will be out there giving prasadam when we come out. Do we just take it in our hand and shove it in our mouth? He's giving us God. He's giving us Krishna. It's a miser takes a jewel and then he looks at it. Ah, the diamond. Ah, I got it. And then he goes to sleep, he puts it under his pillow, and he sets the alarm for every hour it should go off just to make sure the diamond is still under the pillow. That's the way we need to be about Krishna. This is something so important, so valuable. In so many incarnations, we never had it. And now we have Krishna in the form of some prasadam. When we eat it, we have to taste it. We need to relish it. We need to savor it. Not just gulp it down. Oh, wow, I got my maha. That's not it. We don't deserve it, but Krishna loves us, so He gives us gifts. And even when we are indifferent to it, He keeps giving us gifts, hoping one day we will fully and truly appreciate that wonderful maha prasadam that Rabindranath will be out there giving. Come high or hard, what did it go? Come rain or shine, He is out there giving maha prasad. So, I leave you all on this very happy. When I see Archer to get up, I know it's time for me to shut up. No offense meant. I told him to give me the sign, you know, like this, but he didn't do it. Okay. So, Hare Krishna. So thank you so much for listening. It's my great pleasure to share all this with all of you. And please continue to enable me, to help me, to serve you, because that is my only life, my soul, my all. If you don't allow me to serve you, you might as well do what you might as well do what King Nimi did to Vasishtha. He killed him, and therefore you can do the same for me. That's how you kill me, by not allowing me to serve you. Okay, Hare Krishna.
Thank you.